There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hi, let's talk about Pro Plan Sport. Pro Plan Sport is advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours. So wherever your next journey together takes you, start it off right with the high-performance fuel your dog needs to keep pushing you every step of the way. Pro Plan Sport. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know our trusted partner, TireRack.com, for their fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, convenient installation options, and their great selection of best tires, like the highly consumer-rated Toyo Open Country AT3. But did you know they sell other automotive products? Wheels, brakes, suspension, just to name a few. Go to TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
The Volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. No better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. Basketball, football, they have awesome new and existing user promotions. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You can get your winnings back in 2 hours. My favorite, the same game parlays. You can bet $5 or $10 and win $150 or more. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Get started now. Sign up promo code Colin so they know we and I sent you. The Colin Cowherd Podcast, presented by the FanDuel Sportsbook. Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Friday podcast. It's time for fake questions, real answers. There's things I want to talk about, but don't want to wait for you to ask me. Dear Colin, what do you make of Phil Mickelson not playing in the PGA Championship, even though he's the defending champ? Well, I think golf is better when Phil Mickelson plays. There are very few golfers in the world that have a brand. Tiger, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson. What I do think is interesting, though, is if you're a public figure long enough in America, as a politician, a CEO, or an athlete, you will eventually step in it. I'm always interested, once you do, what kind of support do you have? We always thought of Tiger Woods as sort of a solo act, but when he got into personal trouble, his circle may be tight, but many people were there to support him. Tiger Woods made a lot of friends on the tour. He was fun, a guy's guy, and made everybody richer. When Phil Mickelson got into trouble with his comments about the PGA Tour being a dictatorship, crickets. He withdrew from the Masters. He withdrew from this PGA Championship. Where are his allies? Where are his friends? Where's his support system? It tells you a lot about a man. Not when he steps in it. We all do as public figures. But do you have any support when you do? Phil doesn't. Dear Colin, you were vacationing in Italy. Tom Brady, while you were there, signed a massive contract, $35 million a year at Fox. What do you make of it? Why, thank you. Italy was amazing. I was your typical Italian lovemaking machine. Espresso, wine, pizza. My lucky wife. What do I make of it? Listen, there's a lot of really good football analysts out there. Louis Riddick, he's been on our podcast. Excellent. Chris Collinsworth, excellent. Tom Brady's different. Tom Brady is a brand. Fox is paying him a lot of money. I don't know the specific amount, but it's a lot. It is, however, layered. He is not being paid just to be a football analyst. If you could pick one person in America to tie yourself to in regards to football, there's an argument to be made. It's Tom Brady with the NFL. He comes across by superstar standards as kind of wholesome, clean, family guy, loves football, totally committed to things he loves. Listen, Brady will allow you to charge more for every commercial on a football broadcast. He will be used, I imagine, with advertisers, things we call in the advertising community the upfronts. Tom Brady will drive revenue, just like he drove television ratings as a player. I don't know how good he'll be. I was told this by somebody who would know. Brady is good at everything he wants to be good at, and it's really important for him to be a good broadcaster. But that's why you pay him a lot of money. He changes the temperature in every room he's in, and he's probably the best football ambassador in a country of 335 million people. Tom Brady, now at Fox. Dear Colin, what do you make of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher exchanging barbs on recruiting and the name, image, likeness situation? You know, they say this about Hollywood. There are certain positions in Hollywood where you need to get along with people, like actors and actresses. If you have a long career, you'll be on lots of projects working with lots of people. You're already viewed as important, highly compensated, and often a star. It's really important to get along with people. But when it comes to directors, you're dealing with the studio, budgets, and bottom lines. Sometimes you need 20-25% a-hole, like Quentin Tarantino or James Cameron. Different sensibilities for people on the same movie set. That's the way I look at college football coaches. In the NFL, you're not recruiting players. In college, you are. You've got to be a salesman and get along with dad and mom and the son. You've got to deal with boosters and administrators. I've said this before. Every great college football coach in my life has like 20 to 25% a-hole. It doesn't mean they're corrupted people or horrible people, but Saban and Jimbo Fisher have really healthy egos, got into a war of words publicly because that's what guys with egos do. They're both really exceptional, Saban the best ever. But college football coaches are very, very rare. In the NBA, it's a players league. In the NFL, it's a quarterback league. College football is a coach's sport, and it's the only sport that often makes money on an entire campus. You're the state's highest paid employer. Being a little authoritative, bulldozing certain administrators, donors, it's almost a commodity. Dear Colin, what do you make of the USFL ratings on NBC and Fox? They're getting like a million viewers a game. Yes, they are. What's interesting about the USFL is players, young men, have virtually no power. And that's a good thing. Now, for all the wokesters on the internet, we want to enable and empower athletes at all costs. But when you're starting up a business, a professional league, and the WNBA did this about 20 years ago, you cannot give players power. What you need is capital, timing, luck, and the ability to pivot off stuff that works and stuff that doesn't work. The USFL isn't going to make a ton of money. And for the USFL to survive, it needs 2 years of being able to pivot off stuff that immediately doesn't work. You know, they did a Harvard business study years ago. And when we think of Silicon Valley, we think of all the founders as young, brilliant people, 22, 23 years old. That's actually not true. The average age of founders in Silicon Valley isn't 25 or 35. It's actually 45. Because if 25-year-olds are running your company, you're probably going to be in trouble. You need experience. You need people who have been there before. The USFL will work because the athletes in this situation have little to no power and no flexibility. That's the only way a new sports league will work. For the record, the last sports league that was created that became something was the UFC. What do we often hear? Dana White has all the power. Dear Colin, people are saying these NBA playoffs are just like the 1970s NBA. That's the weakest decade, at least the perception is, of the sport. Actually, it's funny. There are certain things that we say are bad or troubled that really aren't. I'll give you an example. Air travel. All I ever see is media people complaining about it, people taking shots at it, ugly videos on the internet of people throwing tantrums on planes. Let's be honest, I just flew from 12 hours in the air from Europe across the Atlantic, across America to LAX. I was served two meals. I saw a movie, an excellent documentary, had half a bottle of wine, some excellent chocolates. I got slippers and was able to sleep 2 hours as well. I get treated better on an airline than I do at home. They were checking on me every 10 minutes. That's how I feel about the 1970s NBA. It got a bad reputation, but it gave us Dr. J and Walt Frazier and Jerry West playing alongside Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Walton, and my Sonics won a championship. It got such a bad reputation. It was a wonderful time. The problem with the league was the 70s, the revenue was terrible, and the commissioner was bad as well. Once they got that right, the NBA was off and running. But the 1970s NBA gets a bad rap like our airlines. I grew up on it. I have wonderful memories. There were many memorable stars. We just didn't have any dynasties, and that's okay too. Dear Colin, what do you make of Biletnikoff winner Jordan Addison, Pittsburgh Panthers wide receiver, entering the transfer portal and landing at USC? Well, I'm glad you asked. What a fine university. You know, I always roll my eyes at fans who think legendary college football and college basketball brands are done for good. We've seen Kentucky and Alabama. We've seen Notre Dame all struggle in the last 20 years. USC football too. But big brands are really, really important, and they never die for good. And what they also do, and we saw this with Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, when the big brand in college basketball or football get the right star coach, they rebound within a season. Go look at Brady Hoke's last year at Michigan and Jim Harbaugh's first year. And that was without the transfer portal and the name, image, and likeness power of USC. The Trojans are going to be really good really quickly. There's three great teams in college football next year: Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama. After that, there's two or three other teams I really like: Clemson and Notre Dame. But after that, there's five or six or seven teams that can compete with virtually everybody: USC, Oregon, Utah, from the West are all in that group.
The playoffs are here. You can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. FanDuel's hooking you up free bets through the playoffs. Free bets. Doesn't matter if you're a new customer or already have an account. Be sure to check out the app. Exclusive weekly same game parlay promos. FanDuel's got so many ways to play. Best of all, when you win, you get paid faster than a fast break. If you're new to FanDuel, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with a promo code Colin. If you already have an account, you're all set to get in on the action. Either way, you'll get an assist from FanDuel when you bet a same-game parlay during the playoffs. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, and Louisiana.
Permitted parishes only. Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 Arizona 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. Connecticut 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Indiana, Jersey, and Virginia. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369 in New York, Tennessee. Redline 1-800-889-9789 Tennessee. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Thank you to our friends at Panini America, the official trading cards and NFTs of the 2024 Colin Cowherd draft coverage. Panini America delivers a premier collecting experience with the most sought-after NFL, NBA, FIFA, and WNBA trading cards. Whether you're chasing rookie sensations or collecting timeless legends, Panini's got it. Panini America is also breaking new ground in NIL, featuring some of the biggest names in college sports, like all-time NCAA scoring leader Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and many of the upcoming NFL and NBA first-round picks. If you're into cutting-edge digital collectibles, don't miss Panini's NFT platform at nft.paniniamerica.net with some of the first opportunities to collect this year's rookie class. Whether you're a collector of physical cards or a digital enthusiast, Panini has you covered. Check out the most popular trading card brands like Prism, Select, Donruss, and more. For those NFL draft fans, get real-time trading cards after players are picked with Panini Instant Cards, celebrating the biggest sports moments on cards right after they happen. Visit PaniniAmerica.net or download the Panini Direct app today. Panini America, the official trading cards and NFTs of the Colin Cowherd draft coverage. Hi, let's talk about Pro Plan Sport. Pro Plan Sport is advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours. So whether you're heading out to explore a new trail or looking to set a personal best on your daily run, start your journey off right with the high-performance fuel your dog needs to keep pushing you every step of the way. Pro Plan Sport. Discover the power of advanced nutrition for strength and stamina at ProPlanSport.com. That's ProPlanSport.com. You put it off long enough, it's time to replace your tires. Tire Rack has tires that will elevate your drive. Touring tires for commuter comfort, performance tires for sporty handling, all-terrain tires for on- and off-road adventure. Go to TireRack.com to get started. Not sure where to begin? Use the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation, the right tires for how, what, and where you drive. Choose from the full line of Hankook tires. Ship fast and free to a recommended installer near you, or choose the convenience of mobile tire installation. They'll bring your new tires to your home or office, install them on site. Doesn't get much easier than that. Go to TireRack.com/Colin to see their Hankook test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all their current special offers. Great tires, great deal. What more could you ask for? That's TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
You know, Mike, what's interesting, I told the staff today, I said, why does it feel like Mike Vrabel's been coaching for 20 years? Like, I can't remember the coaching with the Titans before you. And it's interesting because, you know, the Ohio State, and then you were an assistant. And, you know, you're one of these guys that is a very young, older guy. You've been in the public consciousness forever. So you've only been there from 2018. If I said to you,
25 years, you know, National Football League and right. Ohio State, 25 years, I think that's where I get my mind goes.
If I said today you coach against rookie head coach Mike Vrabel, where would today's coach work you on your first day coaching as a head coach in the league? Where have you really made a jump, in your opinion?
I think just the comfort level of knowing that there's going to be so much uncertainty and you're not going to be able to control everything and you're going to have to just not worry about distractions and trying to avoid them. It's just, how do we handle them? It's just, things are inevitable. I scripted the rookie minicamp. I said, we're going to fumble three snaps. We're going to throw an interception. Linemen are going to run into each other because one's going to go to the right and the other one's going to go to the left. And you guys are going to run into each other. And all these things happen. And they came back laughing after the first practice. I said, I feel like I kind of can script these practices. I know just how they're going to go.
Mike, some of Belichick's assistants haven't done well. You weren't a classic assistant. You went the college route and then came around. So a lot, when I've talked to some of the former Belichick assistants, Bill has such a presence and he's such an intellect that it's, when you're in his presence, you feel like he's a little bit of a guru. I mean, you're trying to soak in all of it. And a lot of coaches have said you do a really bad impersonation of Belichick instead of being yourself. And with you, you have such a strong presence. I don't think you fell into that. I think when I look at you, Mike Vrabel is Mike Vrabel. You're not going to be anybody else. And your wife was a college athlete. You're a former pro football player for 14 years. Do you think because you had such a defined personality and presence, you soaked up some stuff from Belichick, but there's no imitating?
I mean, absolutely soaked up a lot. But I think that my experience there was as a player with other great players. I mean, I've really tried to take a lot from whether it be Teddy Bruschi, Willie McGinnis, Rodney Harrison, experiences with Tom or any of the offensive players, the coaches, Romeo Crennel that I had in the NFL, and then try to mold that, whether it be working for Bill O'Brien or even working for Urban at Ohio State, the conversations with Luke Fickell and Marcus Freeman. I've tried to take all these different things right. And just say, be me, be myself and react how I would react. But these are things that these guys are really good at. How can I, use them to help me or help this team?
You have to be really organized, right? Like every great coach I've known is organized. Were you an organized player?
Is what's ever behind me, if that's organized on the screen on back here, I just make my notes back there because I'm not much of a computer. I kind of just stay organized up here.
I'll give you a coach and you just tell me a sentence, what you'd glean from that coach. If I say to you, Bill O'Brien, you were under. Yeah. Bill O'Brien, what did you take from him?
Authenticity. I remember him saying, the beauty of coaching is believe in something, have a philosophy, get the players to believe in it. And it there's going to be a million different ways, but you have to believe in it and you have to do it your way.
Urban Meyer.
Teaching. Urban was... It was mandatory that you be a great teacher with these college players, and also the connection. I realized in college the connection that you have to have between a player. You get there and they're 17, 18 years old, and they're spending a lot of time with you, and you're a father figure for most of those guys.
Belichick,
being prepared for different situations, also being flexible and understanding that things are going to change, things are going to constantly. Come up and you have to be willing to change and adapt.
See, now that surprises me. I look at Belichick and I think he's so prepared. He wouldn't have that dexterity or that ability to pivot in games. Go back to your playing career with Bill. I mean, were there times, Mike, that you'd come to the sideline and Bill would say, screw it. We're just going to, things have changed.
I think that this has probably been out and probably been said, but people would say, hey, we're going to make some halftime adjustments. And Bill would say, well, if we're waiting until halftime, it's probably going to be too late. Like, we better be making adjustments by the second or third series. Like, the game plan has already shown its hand. It's what they've practiced all week. Pretty much that's what it's going to be the rest of the game.
When did you gain his trust? When did Bill let you call things?
I went in there. And again, this is such a unique situation. I didn't start a game for 4 years. Had a conversation with him in free agency, and he had referenced plays that I had made in a preseason game. He's like, you remember that preseason game against Miami? He's like, that's what we're looking for. That's what we expect. you know, and I went up there with just, you know, a desire to try to be right and be perfect, which you can't be. You can't try to play like that. And I think it was just something where as things started to go on the first or second year, playing different positions, I think he realized that. I think he valued that, the versatility, the willingness to play special teams and really do whatever. Once you show them that, once you show any coach that, whether it's Bill Belichick or anybody, once you show them their willingness to do whatever you can to help the team win, you know, that's how you earn trust.
You know, I was watching the NBA the other day and they were talking about how Jason Kidd in the huddle, being a former pro athlete, it's easier to sell your culture. It's easier to sell the moment. You know, Jason Kidd's had that ball with 32 seconds left so many times. And I look at you and Mike Tomlin, and you both have such a physical presence that one of the things that's always remarkable about Tomlin, that he's never had a losing season, which is freaking ridiculous.
It is amazing.
And he's had some quarterback issues and some drama. Are there times, Mike, when you're in a moment and you do feel like your playing days and your presence helps you in moments? You can sell things.
I think that over the course of my career, I've been every one of those players that are sitting in that team meeting. I was a rookie who didn't know what he was doing. I was a player that changed positions midway through his second year. I was a free agent that signed for less as a signing bonus than what he had when he got drafted. I was a veteran player with a good contract that was expected to produce. And I was an aging veteran that got traded and went to a new team that had to try to help and be a leader. So through the course of that career, when I look in some of those guys' eyes, I'm like, yep, I was you, I was you, I was you. And I think that's what helps.
Mike, it's easier to be an offensive coach, right? Like, we see what's happening to the sport. And some of these great defensive coaches, Bill, Pete Carroll, Vic Fangio's a hell of a coach, Mike Zimmer. These are really good coaches. But I mean, you can't coach like you could 12 years ago. There's stuff you can't do. Do you ever think to yourself, God, could you give me a break here? I mean, your team's really physical. Like that's your stamp to me. Your teams are physical. But do you feel like sometimes the sport has teetered? Tom Brady feels this way. It's teetered a little too offensive.
I don't. I mean, I don't really get caught up in that. I want to be comfortable enough to coach every position on our football team. That's my goal. When I walk around and I go into meetings, I'm in there to learn, to help the players. I don't want to walk into a meeting and not be able to say something that could help one of our players. So my goal is to learn enough to what we're doing in all three phases to be able to help in drills on the field. Like this phase two right now, this is my most favorite time of the season, of the offseason, is because we're working on technique, fundamentals, and conditioning. And sometimes when the season starts, you have 10 minutes for individual. Now we have 35 or 40 minutes. And this is when you can start to make strides and improvements. You're not focusing on so much plays, but it's the techniques and the details of playing offensive line or playing outside linebacker or playing receiver.
You know, Belichick's history was always making a team play left-handed. I see some of that with you, where I see you attack a team's weakness. Has there been a team in the last couple of years that you have faced? And Mike, you thought to yourself, man, it may be a salary cap league, but they don't really have a flaw. Like, they're really hard to coach against.
I think that every single week. I do. In this league, I believe that if you don't play well, you are guaranteed to lose. That's what I believe. That's how I try to coach. And if you play well, you give yourself a chance to win. We try to treat every week the same, win or lose, whether it's a stretch where you go on the road and it's the Rams and the Chiefs and this and that and the other thing and or Buffalo, and it's one after another, but you really just focus on that week and whatever you did last week doesn't matter.
So I defended Ryan Tannehill when he made kind of an average. He talked for a while and he made a small comment, and I said, give me a break. He's 34. He just lost a huge playoff game. He got replaced. You know, they kind of bailed on him in Miami. He's fighting for his career. Give the guy a break. Like, at the end of my career, if they could draft a talk show host, I'll be fighting like mad too. Were you surprised the blowback he got for a fairly innocuous comment on Malik Willis?
There's not a whole lot going on in the NFL right now. So anything that gets said you know, people are going to jump all over. I've touched on this. I know the type of teammate Ryan is, and all I can tell you is the first couple of days have been really cool having three great quarterbacks on our roster, watching them help Malik at practice. He's invited the rookies over already. They've already been at his house. They've had dinner. It's going to be a good dynamic.
I said I thought Malik was my favorite quarterback in the draft just because I thought his upside was huge. And there was intangibles about him. I thought he was great at the podium, which I don't know if it matters to a coach, but I was like, Jesus, that kid's good. Like, he knows how to answer stuff. And it felt really authentic. I didn't feel he was BSing me at the podium. Were there intangibles, not just the play? Were there things like that you looked at as a former player and thought, okay, that you can bring that guy in our room? Like, did that sell you at all?
I mean, I think that you love the play strength when you're talking about on the field. Really like his demeanor, you know, already just with these rookies and handling the huddle. And it's a lot. I mean, the first couple of days is a lot. I mean, we're throwing plays at him, we're formations and motions and cadence. And I mean, it's a lot. And then coming under center with, you know, it's no fault to him. They play in the shotgun. And
that's right.
So we'll teach him how to go under center and run our offense. And when we're in the gun and we're doing those things, and every day he's gotten better, you know, since last Friday, he's gotten better each and every day. And so it's just fun to coach.
I don't, you know, it's the times I've seen little clips of you on YouTube, you're not a real barker, but you've got a player's sense of humor. Like you're a motivator, you know, you can be kind of a smart aleck with players. Like how do you view yourself as verbally with players?
I mean, I have a relationship with all of them. Sometimes that's a little better than others, and the ones that want to chirp, I don't mind chirping, and because we have that type of relationship. You know, so it's good. I mean, you can't have that. You can't say those types of things if you don't have a connection or a relationship, right? It doesn't work. And so when Bill and I would do that and go back and forth, it was because we had something that was built. I mean, we'd built a connection, been there for 8 years. I mean, I remember one time about my third or fourth year, I did something wrong and then I was mad. So I went over and I sat on the offensive side and the defense was over there and Bill was making adjustments. And I just went on the other side and I was just going to pout. And he came over and he said, "You look like Terry Glenn sitting over here by yourself," because Terry was a wide receiver at that time. And I was sitting where the wide receivers were sitting. And I was like, point made. And I got up and I went out there and I walked back, you know, and I got on the defensive side. And you just kind of know, you know, you just kind of know what's the right thing to say at the right time.
Was there a teammate you had as a player that, I mean, you were a big linebacker. Shit, they don't make linebackers like you. 6'4", 250.
Who I was scared to death of? Willie McGinnis and Richard Seymour.
Why?
Well, when I got there, I had remembered being in college and we used to watch like highlights of Willie McGinnis when we were like sophomores at Ohio State. We're like,
right,
man, this is what we're going to be one day. And I'm like, no, we're never going to be like that. He looked like the Banshee at USC. And, you know, our D-line coach, like Bill Young, used to put on like his highlights. And we're like, what the? Like, we're not doing that. And then I go and play. And then I get up there. And it was like, man, I wanted to do so well with the guys that had been there, right? Because Ted Johnson had been there, Teddy Bruschi, Willie. And I was like the new guy coming in. And it was like, how's this guy going to be? And I wanted just to do so well. And then we draft Seymour. And I get to play next to him and he set me up for so many sacks. It was amazing. But Richard was just the biggest, fat, you know what I mean? Very similar to Jeff Simmons, you know what I mean? Just their stature and how physically strong they are.
You know, Bruschi barely got recruited. I remember Bruschi in the Pac-10. I think it was Pac-10, Mike.
Right.
He was an undersized lineman. It was like San Jose State.
Played defensive end, played Desert Swarm.
And I can remember in he's one of the best defensive Pac-12 players I've ever seen in my life. And I remember thinking, I don't think he can play on Sunday. He's too small. So when you're with Bruschi on the field, like he always felt undersized. In fact, when he worked at ESPN, I was like, he brought a briefcase in one time. He was running marathons. And I was like, how the hell? I don't understand it. What was it with Bruschi? Like,
well, I mean, I think that there was just an attitude, you know, I mean, there was just this part Filipino, part Italian, that makes up a pretty vicious combination. And that's how I used to put it. You know what I mean? He had this bitterness to him, and it was a toughness, but he was also very engaging. He was very flexible. You know what I mean? Not only was he like, he had a great first step when you looked at him back in Arizona, you know, he had this power element, but he had this like gumbiness to him that he could like dip and move and bend. And, you know, he's kind of made a lot of plays doing that.
He did. Speaking of you, as the game has become more of a passing league, you're one of the exceptions where you're a power team, an old school team. You were 6'4", 250. And I look at you and I think, God, they don't make a lot of linebackers like you. In today's game, where would you play? What would you do? How would you coach you?
I'd be a defensive end. I mean, I'd probably be, or maybe I'd be a pass-catching tight end. I'm not sure. No. we're only able to get, you know, you have to take these defensive ends in college and make them outside linebackers. And you got to hope the inside linebackers that are in today's game in college can hold up, you know. But we've got some guys that, you know, aren't huge, but David Long and played a lot of football for us last year. And, you know, we're excited about where he's going to be next year. But, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but plays fast. He plays physical. Zach Cunningham's not the biggest guy. But I think that they both play with a huge physical presence inside. So, you know, we can only evaluate the guys that are coming out of college, and that's what it is.
I didn't think Derrick Henry was going to be a great pro. Obviously wrong. He had an interesting career. He got drafted, and he didn't. I mean, he was kind of a rotational guy for a while, and then something popped. Mike, take me back to his emergence from like sharing carries to being unstoppable.
Right. Well, I think it got to be a decisiveness. You know what I mean? It's like when we were putting our scheme in, it was, you know, where do I fit? Where do I run? And, you know, I think finally just trust in the scheme, trust in the landmark, not trying to read too much. I think sometimes you get in trouble at any position that you try to see too much or you're trying to do too much. And so I think he narrowed his focus. I think that he continued to work on his stiff arm and his second level. That, to me, that's the biggest thing is we got to just continue to find ways to get him to the second level and hope that magic happens, and it usually does.
Who was the hardest running back you tackled? Adrian Peterson?
Well, I mean, he was certainly there because I was older in my career. Jerome Bettis was a load when I got to New England. We played him. You know, I mean, young LaDainian Tomlinson, those guys, those are hard guys. Priest Holmes, Ricky Williams, you know, I mean, there's just no shortage of good backs.
Linebacker today and linebacker in your day, you were hard-nosed. I mean, you were physical, really physical.
Yeah.
Do you, is there anybody that you watch in this league and you see yourself a little bit?
No, I mean, players get faster, they get more athletic, and football is always going to be physical. I don't care what scheme you run. I mean, there's going to be a physical presence to play in this game. So, I don't look and say, oh, that guy reminds me of me. I'm so far past those days. I'm trying to find out if we can get guys that can help us win and play our style of football.
There's a piece of video out there that you banged your head when you were at Ohio State and you were banging your head.
Yeah. Corey Linsley, apparently his helmet's a lot stronger than everybody else's helmet. So I'm up to grab Corey Linsley and split my head open.
Did you ever think, like, I think you fit in the NFL, but you do have the physical presence to fit in college. Like, you could walk into a house and recruit kids. Was there ever a moment that you thought, I want to be the Buckeye head coach, forget the NFL thing?
I don't know if I ever thought it then. I just, after 3 years of being in college, spring was tough. You know what I mean? Having played and enjoying coaching and watching baseball, right? When the kids are playing baseball in the spring, that was kind of like my time,
right?
When I was playing. And so then when you go on the road for 5 days out of the week in the spring and you're gone and you miss pitches and strikes and home runs and all that stuff, it was like, man, maybe we ought to take this NFL look. We spent 14 years there. We kind of know the league, you know, let's see if we can do that. And Billy called when he got the job and everything kind of timed up.
College, it feels like a grind to me. It really does. And now they have
recruiting has forced it to be a grind. And it's like, you know, Urban, you say it's like recruiting is like shaving. If you take a day off, you're going to look like a bum. And you just, everybody, you're recruiting. I mean, I talked to a coach today, invited him to be on our, a part of our internship program for training camp, the Bill Walsh program. And I called him and I just said, hey, you know, excited to offer you the position. And he says, I said, what's going on? He's like, man, we got three official visits today, tomorrow, Friday. Like, we got nine kids coming in, transfer portal. It's out of control. But, you know, we got to take them if they're looking to come to our place or they're going to go somewhere. I mean, it was like official visits. I'm like, it's May and they're coming on official visits. So it is year round.
Yeah. Were you a good recruiter?
Yeah. Yeah, I was a good recruiter.
Were you? What was your sell? What was you're selling the Buckeyes.
Yeah, it wasn't when you coach at Ohio State, it's not very hard to recruit. You know, it really isn't. I felt like I did a nice job recruiting. I mean, the players that we were looking for and targeting, and you know, you always lose a couple, but you get some too.
There's housing bubbles, there's tech bubbles, there's stock market bubbles. And during the last 6 months, I've been joking on the air, like we're in a wide receiver bubble. If Tyreek Hill goes for five picks. I remember when I was on the air and I'm like, the hell is that? Five picks. Randy Moss went for like a fourth to New England. And, you know, AJ Brown, he's on the market. There's picks, stuff going on. Part of me is just Mike thinks, okay, I like my receivers, but God, you got to win the line of scrimmage. Did you look at this offseason a little bit, all these moves at wide receiver, and think we've kind of lost our way on the value of it? Or do you like think the world's changing in this league?
No, I mean, I don't know. I know that every situation is different, and I know that everybody gets the same amount to spend. And, you know, you have to make decisions. You have to make tough decisions. And so I don't know. I don't know where the receiver market's going to end up. I mean, I know the good players deserve to be compensated, and that's the nature of professional sports. But you also have to work within a salary cap, and you have to try to find a way to continue to do what's best for the entire team. And so I don't know. I don't know where the market's going. I know that, the salary cap's going to continue to go up, specifically about AJ. You know, I think everybody knows my relationship with AJ and, you know, how much that meant to me. And I hope him, and we've had conversations, you know, since he's been traded.
It just, it makes you sick, right? Like he's.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have a personal side to this thing. When you try to do it, like we try to do it and make a connection and, you know, care about these guys off the field and making sure that they're healthy, you know, mentally and physically. There's a business side to it too. And that's what everybody, you know, you have to understand that. And if you put a lot into something and, you know, you guys move on, you have to make cuts, you release guys. And so that's the hard part of it. But I'm not going to change the way that we coach. I don't want our coaches or myself or anybody here to change the connections that we try to make to teach them.
A lot of young coaches, Mike, struggle to relinquish during a game their side of the ball. I've seen a lot of coaches that's like, okay, this is my job. This is my last chance. I feel like when I watch you, you're kind of holistically teaching the whole unit. You bounce around. You're like, I would call it, this is a compliment, a bounce around coach. You're always kind of, was that an easy thing? Or your first year, were you like manic about, well, time out. I want to control my space.
Yeah, no. I mean, I felt like that was how I wanted to do it. You know, I figure once you get hired as a head coach, you've got one chance to do it. And then so you better do it the way that you think is best. And, you know, you try to hire good people, let them do their job, and you try to manage the game and give suggestions. And again, I want to be good enough to say, hey, what do you think about this on special teams? And then everybody made a big deal, or it was joked about when I said, are you going to, you know, call the defense or the offense? At any point in time, you get to call whatever play you want. You're the head coach, right? But it was a joke, but it was like, seriously, if I want to run a fake punt, if it doesn't work, it's on, you know, everything that doesn't work is on me. That's how it goes. I'm okay with that. So I try to give input. I try to help and, respect the play caller and try to make those suggestions in enough time that they can make a call. And, and so that it doesn't affect the team.
Finally, Tom's last game in New England, you coached against him and beat him with this pick six. All the years you practice against him, was there, I mean, obviously the answer is yes. There are things that you just instinctively know about Tom because you practiced against him every damn day. There is no secret sauce, but are there little things you felt like, okay, I saw this 1,000 times at practice. This makes Tom uncomfortable. Anything?
Well, it was more or less just the, and I told this analogy when we went up there in the playoffs. It was the line from the movie Catch Me If You Can, when the dad says to the son, you know why the Yankees always win? And the kid goes, because they have Mickey Mantle. And the dad says, no, because everybody's always staring at the pinstripes. And the point was, don't look over there and see it as Tom Brady and be like, oh my gosh, how many banners. Like, it was like, just go play our game. Here's what we know about him. They're going to mix tempo, or he's going to go, So that was the biggest point that I could probably take about playing against, Tom and the Patriots at that point in time.
I think his arm strength, I honestly feel his release is faster. That's the weirdest thing. Like, it's weird.
Wasn't there a movie where the kid like had a tendon surgery or something, like the rookie of the year, and he was like a little kid and he was like throwing 95? I think Tom had that surgery, apparently.
No. Hey, Mike, I appreciate it. You're a busy guy. Thank you for talking to us. I really appreciate it.
And enjoyed the conversation.
Make sure to check out the Draymond Green Show. I brought Draymond Green into the Volume because one of the more entertaining voices in sports, unique perspective, understands behind the rope, also chops up with guests like Gary Payton, Zach LaVine, Tracy McGrady. Make sure, download the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts, only on the Volume Podcast Network.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.